Hello, and welcome to episode 95 of Bite-Sized Blessings. This week, I interview Justin, who also goes by the name of Bud. So for the rest of this interview, and on the website, he'll be known as Bud. It's a family name, and we'll get into that later. Bud is a tattoo artist, among many other things. He's in love with podcasts, he's in love with art, he's a true creative. He's a tattoo artist here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, at Four Star Tattoo. But Bud seems to be one of those unique individuals whose life has been touched by many different magical and mysterious events. In this episode, Bud talks about what happened after his near-death experience. He did, in fact, actually die, and we'll get into that later. But it's what happened after that that I thought was really intriguing and very interesting. And as Bud tells the story, I think you'll understand what I'm talking about. In this season that's so close to the Day of the Dead, where we honor our ancestors, where we try to make friends with death, where we invite death into our living rooms, into our lives, I think the timing of this podcast couldn't be better. So now, without further ado, episode 95 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
I had a near-death experience before I was a tattooer or anything. I was married at the time, and we were cleaning out a closet, and it was getting dust. I have asthma, too, by the way. So, and it's dust, and I'm allergic to everything, too, and just the dust and everything, and I started having an asthma attack. And at that time, I was smoking cigarettes like an idiot and as well. And so I would go to the hospital, like, once a month, just to the emergency room, just to, like, get a breathing treatment. So I ended up driving myself to the, I was like, it's just another thing. I'm just going to go to the emergency room, get my breathing treatment, whatever. And my wife was like, you sure you don't want me to go? I'm like, I'll be back. Don't worry about it. And then I ended up coding. I guess I would just say, like, when it comes down to, like, the brass tacks of it, of who I am as a person, I'm a creator. I create things every day. I'm an artist, you know. I guess you definitely have to put me in that category. But the creator part is definitely, like, I feel like I'm always thinking about the next thing I want to create. And then as I create something, then I'm moved forward into the next project or the next thing I'm creating. If it be a tattoo or art or, you know, I just painted a little cabinet that I got the other day. You know, just little projects, little artistic ways of being and creating things all the time.
Cool. I actually wanted to ask you, what is your favorite tattoo that you've done?
So that is a really hard question. It's a really difficult question because I'm constantly creating. I'm constantly doing it all the time. And I've been tattooing for 21 years now. And so that's 21 years of tattoo after tattoo after tattoo. I definitely have ones that, and when it comes to the tattoo, it's mostly the person, you know, I'm connected with that person who I tattooed, who was super cool, a person that you kind of respect and a person that you've had great conversations with. And we spend a lot of time with people in the tattoo chair as tattooers. So you're constantly, you know, getting good vibes and bad vibes. But, you know, usually a good tattoo comes from having a good conversation or something like that with someone. And then together, I feel like with their energy and what I do, we create something that's something I can be proud of. So I grew up in, it was just me and my mom growing up. And my first kind of, so it's hard to explain. So my mom was kind of a person who would kind of use people to get what she needed and wanted. We were on welfare, we were super poor, and so a lot of my early childhood was her using churches, I mean, quite frankly, to get money off of or to get food or whatever. And she would kind of have a narrative of this, you know, kind of woman and her son and this kind of sad story. And then, of course, these churches would come and help her out and whatever, give her money, whatever. And then we would basically live somewhere for a time, use up the resources, and then we'd move to another small town and she would kind of do that same thing. She was a person that, I mean, looking back now, you know, she was very troubled, and she had a lot of tragic things happen to her when she was a child, a lot of stuff like that. So she was just not really equipped to be a mother. And it's taken me a long time to figure that out, especially with age and time and looking back at things. Because there was a time there where we just didn't get along at all. And because it, in turn, you know, being growing up poor, there were times where, you know, there was no food, there was no, you know, we just, you know, being pulled out of school after school into another school and meeting new people and that creating all kinds of problems, you know, for being a young person or a young kid trying to like navigate like school and friendships and stuff like that. So we're always moving, and sometimes you move in the middle of the night, and it was just crazy. But anyway, back to your question. The religion, I saw religion as just an end, you know, ways to an end or whatever. Just a way to, did I believe in God? Probably, I didn't understand what God was, you know, at that time. I kind of don't now, even. Who knows what God is, you know? But back then, I definitely had friends and stuff who were religious, and there were Wednesday nights where we would go to they would have like I forget what it was called, but it was basically like a little meeting, like Bible study thing that they would have on Wednesday nights for kids, and that was a place where you could go, and it was a very social thing, you know, and I really liked that. And but I think, you know, as soon as I would kind of start, it's a horrible analogy, but like drinking the Kool-Aid, I guess, as soon as I was like kind of getting into it and being like, okay, I kind of understand this, there's this God and there's Jesus and there's, you know, and then, but then we'd move on to the next place and it'd be like, well, if all those things are true, why is this happening to me?
It sounds like your mom was just trying to survive.
Yeah, she was a survivor for sure. She was a detriment to herself through that because she didn't see the writing on the wall sometimes. But I mean, she was doing the best she could. And that took me a long time to realize too. It's like, you know, she really was trying, but she was getting there through lies and manipulation like a child would, you know? And that, I think when things happened to her as a child, you know, she was abused sexually and physically. And I think when those things happened, I think she just turned off in a way. And she just had this childlike way of being. And then, you know, this childlike person has a child, you know, and then through that. And a lot of my growing up and rearing was through, was through television, you know, like understand, like growing pains and being like, oh, this is the only way. So this is how how family works, because mine's not like that at all. But a lot of it was like understanding, and I guess some intelligence came from somewhere, because I understood, well, that's not the way to do that, you know? And so like my whole reason I am who I am now is because I saw her doing things and being like, well, I'm not, that's dumb. Why would you go about doing it that way? Why wouldn't you just work hard? Why wouldn't you just, you know, go do it legit, you know? Why do you have to manipulate people? Why do you have to care about having a relationship more than anything, you know? Because that was kind of a thing of her too. She just always thought if she got a man, then they would just, you know, be the knight in shining armor, would just, you know, sweep us off our feet, and would tell me that, you know, well, I gotta find a guy and then you'll be rich and then you'll, you know, it's like, and I'm constantly like looking for dad, you know, that never happened. So yeah, I mean, when you talk about spirituality and religious stuff, I mean, I was kind of jaded early on, but through like, you know, my life, I'm 46 years old now. So I feel like I have a better understanding of life, and I'm not, and I've had experiences with ayahuasca, like certain psychedelics that kind of take you through a death ritual, where you understand death, I think, a little bit better. You know, the shaman kind of sings these songs and it kind of takes you, your mind, and takes you away from your body, to the realm of the dead, I guess they would say. And but you see that there's more, you know, the first thing I remember thinking when that experience happened was it felt very familiar, you know? I'm like, oh, I've been here before, you know? Like, that was weird to me, you know? And it's because you are there. You were there before you were a thing. You were in this space. You were in this thing. And then you got shot out and into the world. And then here we are. And then you go back, you know, when you pass away, that's, you go back to this energy field, you know. Sounds kind of hokey, but that's how I felt it.
Did you feel like there was life there in the realm of the dead?
I felt that's where life, well, not, well, so much in the life of the, well, in the realm where you go with the ayahuasca, you feel life. You feel like, what is life? You know, life is energy. Life is, and it's there. It's there. And I feel like, and I've also done DMT a few times, and those experiences for sure make you feel like you were somewhere before. It just made me feel like I was carrying a luggage or a suitcase filled with love. And like, you come from this place of love, and you know, you get spit out as a little baby or whatever. And then you just constantly are filled with love. And then when you die, you go back to that energy of love or of life, you know. Life is love. I've had, not me personally, but I've heard several times from clients and stuff, because what we do as tattooers, we, you know, there's a lot of commemorative tattoos that happen for people that pass away. So when they do that, come in for those, there's always a story. And it's weird because, like, speaking of energies and such, like, that brings a certain energy to the shop when somebody's commemorating somebody who just passed. And usually it's very recent, within the last week or whatever. Yeah, I want to get this because, you know, my brother died. He'd been struggling with, you know, drug addiction for his whole life, and ended up just succumbing to it. And it's like, oh my God. So, you know, and these stories, like, there's a once famous tattooer who got out of tattooing because he felt like the energies that these people were bringing to him was affecting him. And I understand it completely. It's just, it's kind of like you have to put up a barrier and, like, not allow these things to, like, you know, get into you or whatever, because it's sad. You know, there's times where I've tattooed people and I've just stopped and started crying, you know, like, they have such sad stories. One was a man who, his wife had died of cancer. She was in the hospital and they're like, she's within hours of passing away. And I think she just said to him, I want to go home. And so he picked her up and they took her home. And then, you know, she ended up passing away, and then he ended up carrying her out to the ambulance. And I was just like, you know, like, just bawling my eyes out. Just like, all right, man, you gotta stop. You gotta stop. Like, this is just, we gotta talk about something else, you know, like, because it's just, it affects not only, you know, me personally and my emotion and whatever, but it also affects the tattoo, because I can't physically see the tattoo if I'm crying. But on another note, like I was saying before, people have had many stories about that kind of situation where somebody passed, and then, you know, grandpa loved cardinals, and then after his funeral, we were outside on the porch, and a cardinal came up and landed right on the fence right there by the porch, and it just stood there, and just, we looked at it, and then it flew away, you know, and it's like, ah, you know, it's like, and they're like, that was grandpa, you know, like, that story times 10 at least, you know, in 21 years of tattooing, I've heard the same. So there's something to that. There's either you're, you know, maybe it's not grandpa, but maybe it is the essence of grandpa, or maybe it's just you're bringing that into your own perception because you, you know, maybe there's a cardinal sometimes that comes around anyway, but maybe not, you know, like, I try to be somewhat skeptical, but there's definitely something to it. There's definitely something, like we were saying before, there's definitely something, some sort of energy or something that I'm not going to say creator, but yeah, there's definitely something that we don't know what's going on. You know? Definitely believe that. I had a near-death experience before I was a tattooer or anything. I was married at the time, and we were cleaning out a closet, and it was getting dust. I have asthma too, by the way. So and it's dust, and I'm allergic to everything too, and I just the dust and everything, and I started having an asthma attack. And at that time, I was smoking cigarettes like an idiot, as well. And so I would go to the hospital like once a month, just to the emergency room, just to like get a breathing treatment. Because my asthma, and this is, you know, 25 years ago probably now, so it's like there wasn't really a lot of, I mean, there was some medicines and stuff, but it wasn't like it is now where you can regulate your asthma so much easier. Like, I haven't had an asthma attack in a decade probably, a bad one anyway. So I ended up driving myself to the, I was like, it's just another thing. I'm just going to go to the emergency room, get my breathing treatment, whatever. And my wife was like, you sure you don't want me to go? I'm like, I'll be back. Don't worry about it. And then I ended up kind of passing out on the way there. And then I pulled up and parked the car in a weird spot and then got into the emergency room. They sat me down and gave me breathing treatment. They ended up giving me like two or three breathing treatments and it wasn't helping. And then my ex-wife was there at the time. And this is from her vantage point because I passed out. And then, so then I coded and almost died. And the next thing I remember is being flown by emergency helicopter to the bigger city, Des Moines. I'm from Iowa, and to Des Moines, to the hospital there. And I just remember kind of waking up as they were taking me out of the helicopter. I was in a coma for a day, and then that next day I came out, and they, you know, I was able to speak and everything. And but anyway, so I had this like traumatic kind of like health thing happen to where I feel like I was really close to death, if not like went there and then came back, you know. And with that experience, it changed my life because I had to I reevaluated everything for good and for bad. And I had to like make changes in my life. So that's basically when I went down the road of being a tattooer. And I mean, I worked at a factory and stuff, and I worked for kind of a mom and pop Best Buy at the time. But I knew that I didn't want to do that. I knew I wanted to go do something else. And in turn, that changed my perception of life. And I felt an urgency, and I felt like, it's weird to say, but I made some decisions at that time to basically kind of leave my family, you know, and be very selfish and look out for me and do the things I wanted to do. And looking back, I shouldn't have made those decisions. I should have done different. I should have stuck around and seen things through. But I was so frightened by the perception of death at that point that I was like, I got stuff I got to do. And the kids will be fine. Their mom is great. You know, she'll take care of them, and I'll be weekend dad, and I'll just pump money into this situation, make money, and really try to make that help them. And then, of course, looking back, like, that was not the route I should have went, you know. I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm glad I did, because it helped me feed the desire to create and to do things, but it left some people behind. And those are relationships that with my children. I have two boys, older, they're 22 and 24. But that definitely, that time where I wasn't there as much is definitely something that we work through, you know, we talk through. Luckily, I have a good relationship with them now, but it wasn't always like that.
Ask you when you were did you have any sense that you were dying when you had this experience?
I mean, I knew it was bad, but I don't. I mean, like I said, all I remember is from the emergency room, and then there was a blank where I don't know what happened, and then waking up in the helicopter, and then the next day.
Okay.
So I mean, I didn't really have time to think. I don't know, my body just wasn't...
You didn't have an out-of-body experience?
I didn't have an out-of-body experience. I didn't see a white light. I didn't see any of that. I was just unconscious. and then these moments of consciousness. Now, when I woke up, you know, I was tied to a bed, and I had the breathing tube down me, and the first thing I did was I motioned with my hands to, like, write something down. And they gave me a sheet, and I wrote get this effing thing off of me, get it out of me or something. So they're like, all right, we'll do that, you know, because it had me tied down because I wanted to, like, pull it out, you know, it's like a natural thing. But anyway, so I was laying there and they got it out of me, which was terrible. I had a catheter. It was totally terrible. And I just remember thinking I got through it. You know, I didn't think like, oh, I almost died. Mm-hmm. But looking back, I knew that it was, you know, and then with perspective after that, being like, wow, I almost died. Like I could not be here. You know, made me think, you know, it's whenever anything happens, especially during the ayahuasca situation or the ayahuasca ceremony, I'm constantly having deja vu. And then the deja vu comes back to that ceremony. And when my friend passed, I went right back to the ayahuasca ceremony and thinking about death and thinking about just, you know, where does our energy go? You know, it is just, we are just a vessel. It's like the light bulb. Is the light bulb produce the light, or is the light the thing? You know, like, it's not the light bulb, it's the light inside the light bulb that creates the light. You know, it's what are you? Are you the thing? Are you the vessel? Are you the, and we're vessels, you know, these are just meat sacks that what makes me and what makes you isn't this physical thing. It's mm-hmm. the energy or the what's inside of us, you know, the soul, if you will. But
so you did the ayahuasca after your near-death experience?
It was after.
Okay, because yeah, I'm just wondering, when you said that you went to the land of the dead or the realm of the dead,
yeah.
And did you say it felt familiar?
Felt familiar, yeah. I mean, it's the two experiences are somewhat different because they're two different chemicals. Are very similar, like DMT and ayahuasca are very similar. But that was definitely a familiar feeling. The feeling with the ayahuasca, it was a bit familiar. Like, oh, this is like, I'm back. Like my soul is going back to some sort of energy or some sort of place. But I really had that familiar feeling with the DMT that first time when I really opened the door, if you will, to perception, you know, like opened the door to like this new realm of thinking or life or whatever. Love. I mean, that's what it always comes down to. I would be remiss if we didn't speak about Star Wars, because Star Wars is such a part of me. And it really is probably the first time. It's probably my first time where I watched that when I was a young child, very impressionable, and went, the Force, that makes sense. You know, like that really, I remember, and probably the first time I really felt spiritual was understanding that there was a Force to everything. Now, could you move stuff? No, yeah, of course you can't do that. But at least there was like some sort of thing happening, like we were talking about. There's some other thing going on that we don't understand yet, or, you know, we as humans are always trying to figure out, but yeah, the Force was definitely like the beginning of a spiritual kind of like understanding. But I did have a bit of a, I must have been like 10 or 12 years old. And it was, my mom was driving in a car. This is in a rural area between Colfax, Iowa and Des Moines. It's on like a two-lane highway kind of thing. Middle of the day, driving along, and we just see this like blur. The only way I can explain it is just a fast blur, and it came out of the ditch, went across the road, and then down into the other ditch, and then vanished. And it wasn't an animal. It wasn't like anything. It moved too quickly. It was like a ball of energy. It's the only way I can say it. You know, like just this speeding, and it came up out and just like that, went right across. And there was a moment of silence after it happened. And then I think my mom or my grandma was like, did you see that? And I was like, yeah, what was that? You know, I'm a little kid, what was that? You know? And they're like, we don't know. And we're just like, and then I just remember like wherever we were going, we talked about it the whole time, and just about how weird it was. And my mom had also, you know, she lost her brother a year before that's why my name is Bud, because he was Bud. He died a year before I was born in 1975, I believe. And backstory, so there was my Uncle Bud, right, my mom, and then four or five other aunts, yes, five, six girls, one boy. And supposedly my mom had heard this story, and I think my other aunts could probably substantiate it, because I think I've asked them too, but they all had the same dream about him one night, and they all woke up the next day and were talking, and they're like, I had this dream about Bud last night. And they're like, yeah, I had this dream about Bud last night too. And then, and they were very, I mean, just verbatim the same dream. When my grandma passed away, my grandma Helen passed away, I mean, it was just weird childhood and stuff. I didn't have a lot of death as a child. You know, some people have, you know, people dying all the time. Aunts, uncles, grandmas, grandpas, you know, all this stuff. When my grandma died, she was like the first person that ever really, that I was really close to, who passed away. And we had a pretty good relationship. She had been, I know she'd been abusive to my mom, and she had been, you know, not the greatest mom either, very abusive. But as a grandma, she wasn't like that at all. I don't know why she wasn't like that, but she probably went through some life. I was to speculate she'd gone through some life stuff, and maybe, or maybe she's just too old to be that way. I don't know. But I was laying there in bed one night, and I was thinking about her, thinking about her, thinking about her. And it gives me the heebie-jeebies thinking about it. I haven't thought about it in a really long time. But I was laying there just on my back. I never sleep on my back, but I was laying on my back. And I just remember looking up at the ceiling, and there just being, not her face or anything, but just a presence of her. Just a presence. Nothing ethereal or weird or, you know, ghost-like or anything like that. Just her presence. And then as clean as I'm talking to you right now, I heard her voice say, it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. I'm fine. Go on with your life. It's going to be fine, you know. And then I remember just being paralyzed. I don't know if I was paralyzed because of the, like, what that energy was doing, or it was just from fear, you know, just like, because it's probably the closest thing. We talked earlier, you know, like, I don't know if I've really had anything. That is probably the closest I've come to having any kind of experience of that nature. Could have been in my mind, right? Could have been in my mind.
I guess, but also yeah. It kind of, I don't know, it's, that's such a powerful experience to have as a child. I mean, it kind of lets you in the back door of what death is, that it's not permanent, and that your grandmother went somewhere or is still present. Or
right. It's a, I mean, what do you think? What happens when people die?
What do I think?
Yeah, what do you think? You're like, I'm not the interviewer. You're not the interviewer.
Well, I mean, that's actually really interesting.
I mean, do you feel like energy like continues?
Yes. So I'll tell you about a dream I had.
Okay.
So I was in Portland. I don't know how long ago this was. 12 years ago, 10 years ago. And I've had a lot of weird experiences. So, but this dream kind of like, this dream shook me, shook my entire world for several years. It just really was like that gift you don't want, sort of. So I was deeply dreaming, and I was looking out at the universe. Mm. So I was like floating in space, and it was just like the stars and the black sky. And I was just floating there, and you could kind of hear that hum of being in deep space, you know? And this figure came in and said to me, oh, you think that's real? This is what's real. And then it reached down, and literally, like the universe was a curtain, pulled the curtain back of what was behind everything. And it wasn't anything visual. It was, and I can't explain what it was because it's beyond. But the only word I can use, which is just totally not appropriate, is love. It was like this transcendent feeling that infuses every bit of every cell, every atom that permeates everything. And I woke up out of the dream, and that feeling was in my room. It had filled the entire room. This was like 2 a.m. And I was just like, what just happened? And then it, but it was disturbing because I knew that I'd been shown something that not a lot of people get to see, but then I have this terrible knowledge. You know, because is any of this real? Is it? What does that mean for what I'm looking at and going through every day? And it then 2 years of like being tormented followed, which was kind of terrible. So until I went to go see this amazing acupuncturist, and he like set me straight, but I was kind of disturbed for 2 years.
Wow.
Because I was like, I don't, why would you tell me this? Like, I don't want this.
Right.
I don't want this. I mean, it was horrible.
Yeah,
it was like a horrible thing that I was like, oh my God.
Right.
Like, what am I supposed to do with this? What am I supposed to do?
That's what I was gonna say earlier about my grandma too. That's another thing that she had said to me in that moment was, you know, death isn't a bad thing. You know, death isn't like the end of something. It's just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, that's pretty profound.
It is, yeah. I think I've talked about this on another podcast, but I used to work for an elderly couple for 14 years in Portland, and Sam was 98. And so June I would do lots for them, but June would go out 3 times a week and get lunch to get a break, and I would have lunch with Sam. It was one of my jobs. And he was just the most curious and intellectual person, very kind. And one day at lunch he said, "What do you think happens when we die?" And I was like, "Oh my, I don't know. I'm eating my Cobb salad. I'm like, I don't know if I can answer this right now." And he said, "I think it's the next great adventure." And I said, wow. And he died not long after that, after a weekend. And it was very interesting the way he died. I came on my normal day, arms full of groceries, walked in the door, and Sam was sitting in front of the TV as he normally does. And I said, "Hi, Sam," because I always said hi first. And I could see June in the next room working on the computer. And Sam didn't respond. And I looked at him and I was like, he's yellow, you know? And so I thought, okay, you know, how I respond to this and handle this is going to affect June forever.
Right.
So I just put the groceries down.
Sorry to interrupt, but in that moment, did you know that he'd passed?
Yes.
Or you were like,
absolutely.
He's dead.
Okay. He was, yeah.
Wow.
I knew that he'd passed. And so I just went over to June and I said, you know, June, Sam's not responding. And she said, what? He literally just sat down to watch TV. And you know, paramedics came, they took him and all of this stuff. And June and I were sitting there and she said, you know, he said it would be like this. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, over the weekend, because he was having problems breathing over the weekend, he said, I don't want you to worry. You're not going to be alone when I die. Kirsten's going to be here and she'll take care of you. And so she said that morning he had said, as she was sitting him on the couch, who's coming today? Because their grandchildren would come on other days.
Okay.
And she said, Kirsten's coming today. And she walked away and he's like, okay, that's good. And he literally left because he knew that I was going to be there.
Wow.
So he chose.
Why?
He chose when to leave.
I've tattooed. That's so amazing. That is so amazing. Right. Like he knew. He knew. You know?
Absolutely.
And I think when you're in that situation, you know, right? You know, like, it's time, you know? I used to tattoo this woman who worked as a hospice nurse. And she had stories of literally seeing energy leave people's bodies. And, I mean, that was another thing where it was like, can't talk about this. I'm trying to tattoo you. Like, I can't do this.
Episode 95 of Bite-Sized Blessings. I think what I most found intriguing was after Bud did the ayahuasca, he went to the land of death and it felt familiar to him, like something that he'd known. And so in my mind, I'm making the connection between his near-death experience because he'd already been there, right? He'd already been to the land of death and that's why it was so familiar. That's just my idea, my imagination going wild. You, dear listener, can make your own determinations. And with that, I need to thank Bud Weeks for being such a gracious and generous guest on the show. I'm really grateful that he shared all of his stories with me. I need to thank the creators of the music used on this episode: Alexander Nakarada, Sasha End, Raphael Crux, Frank Schroeder, Kevin McLeod, and Winnie the Moog. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to other episodes, to art, to Bud's tattoos, under his episode show notes, and other things that I think will lighten and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Bud. Live with the idea that in the land of death, there is life, there is love, and it's not the end of anything, but it's only the beginning. It's the beginning of a new adventure.